The young Vale?
Yes.
Is it David?
Yeah.
Welcome. Welcome, brother.
Thank you.
This is my older son.
Alright, so everybody has a handout, everybody has pens, we're all ready to go. Alright, so like I was saying, Song of Solomon, it's kind of a neglected book, we don't hear a lot about it. I've never really heard a sermon on it. Usually it's not, someone's favorite verse. Actually, Lauren likes a few verses in Song of Solomon. She did a little painting one time, but it's got some really good stuff in it. But the book is loaded for good stuff for us. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, the first thing I wanted to kind of talk about, Ephesians, okay. In the New Testament, we're told many times to love our husbands. Like Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church. Women are told to love their kids. In Titus, I found a verse that older women should teach the younger women how to love their husbands and to love their kids. So, hundreds of verses in the New Testament about how we should love others. But we're really not told in the New Testament what that looks like. And fortunately, we have Song of Solomon, which is the book of love, that shows us what love looks like in practice. So that's the cool thing about this book. So. Yes, sir.
What about 1 Corinthians 13?
1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter. Love is patient, kind. That's another one that, I did a word search this week, and there's like 150 occurrences of the word love in the New Testament, and just like 1 Corinthians 13 with charity. It actually uses charity in that one. We're told many times how important love is. It's actually one of the two great commandments, in Mark 12:30.
Love your God with all your heart.
Yeah, yes.
And then love your neighbor.
Yes, the two rules.
John 13:35, that's how all men shall know that you're my disciple if you have love one for another.
Yeah, proving my point. Lots of verses on love. Song of Solomon shows us what that looks like in everyday living. So, alrighty, so as you would guess, it was written by Solomon. I'm looking at the stats now on our handouts. And again, it was Donnie. It was written, and we've talked about this many times. This will be the last time we see this little graph. Song of Solomon was written at the beginning of Solomon's reign. He had just taken the throne. And then he wrote Song of Solomon. So he's probably in his early 20s. He already had like 80 wives when he wrote this book, so he's no stranger to romance. But he was a young guy, young romantic. Some other names for the book. The Hebrew, in the Hebrew Bible, it's called the Song of Songs, Canticle of Canticles. Just like we use King of Kings, Holy of Holies, this is the song. Solomon wrote 1,000 songs, 1,005, and this is the best, which we'll get that in a little bit. The 50,000 foot summary. Now most people will say, and they're correct, that Song of Solomon is a book about the joy and intimacy of marriage, and that's true, it is. But when I was putting this lesson together a few weeks ago, I thought, there's a lot of folks in here that aren't married. And there's a lot of application in the book that just covers all love. So that's kind of the way I'm going to approach it today. It's not just a book about marriage. It's a book about loving each other. Make sense?
Yeah.
Which, I might just point this out real quick. We are in the wisdom books still. The five wisdom books. On the back of your handout, I made this snappy little headshot here. Today with Song of Solomon, we're closing out the five wisdom books. We've finished all five now. And each one of these wisdom books give us God's instruction with an area of our lives. So I did this little drawing to kind of show, how Job was the suffering, Psalms was praise and worship, You know, Proverbs was instruction for success. Ecclesiastes was the purpose of life. Song of Solomon, the Book of Love. So that's what you have there. All right. Speaking of Song of Solomon, the first candy bar bonus question. And we have covered this extensively, so I'm hoping everybody knows. There's two books in our Bible that don't have the name of God, Lord, or anything. Kevin.
Ruth.
Esther.
I knew it was one of them.
I knew you guys know. I had three already. Yes. The Tambora's nailed it. Esther. The Song of Solomon, God's not mentioned. So, the Book of Esther. What is the other? All right. Double candy bar bonus. What does Solomon's name mean? Solomon.
Single man?
No, he was not single.
Looks like solo man.
It means peace.
That's what I
mean. Yeah, it's single peace. Man. Put the candy bars up. Yeah, Solomon's name means peace, and that'll come into play in a little bit. That's why I stuck it on here. Remember, Solomon was the king of rest. It was peace in his time. And because he was a man of peace, Ecclesiastes allowed him to do his thing and goof around for 20 or 30 years because he didn't have to worry about war. So, all right, some more facts about Solomon. All right. Like I said, he wrote 1,005 songs. We don't have those songs, those 1,005 songs. We have this one. So this is the greatest hits of Solomon. And I always wondered why 1,005. That's kind of an odd number. I mean, why not just 1,000? Well, I was listening to J. Vernon McGee here last week, and he's one of my favorites. And he's correct that the Song of Solomon is actually five songs. That's kind of in an opera play type layout. So that leaves 1,000 songs, and he had 1,000 wives, so he may have wrote a song for every wife.
But was five his,
but five for her because she was special. So I thought that was, who knows if that's true or not. But
isn't five the number of humanity?
It's close. It's number of death.
Death.
Some say grace. Six, I know Dale. Yeah. Yeah, six is the number of man.
Number of man. Okay. Yeah, there we go.
Very cool. All right. So, all right. He wrote 1,000 songs. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Remember, we talked about that last week in Ecclesiastes. So what in the world would qualify Solomon to give us advice on marriage? That's kind of funny. It was my first thought. But he did love this girl more than any others, and he wrote this beautiful song around her about her. And then I mentioned this last week, that throughout Jewish history, the young Jew boys were forbidden to read Song of Solomon until they were at least 30. So I think that's kind of funny. Did anyone get a chance to read? I know Kevin did. Did anyone read Song of Solomon this week? Suzanne did?
I figured you had to be
further along. Oh, you did? You listened to it? Yes.
That's what I did.
And I know Sherry did, and I did several times, and it's a heck of a book. It's very descriptive. So, it's a good book. Yeah. All right, Song of Solomon.
You ain't going to answer the question, how come he's supposed to be giving it?
Well, no one really knows, other than, I mean, it's kind of a question I've always had. What qualifies this guy? But
because he's a wisdom professor.
He was the wisest guy, and he loved this girl more than any others. He's one of the greatest types of Christ. Not the greatest, but one of the greater
Joshua
types of Christ. Well, Joseph and David were very strong types, too. All right. The Song of Solomon. This is what I thought was interesting, too, with Solomon. This kind of explains why we don't hear more sermons about it. It is one of the more mysterious, controversial books in our Bible. Even more so than Revelation, because a lot of people just don't know how to handle Song of Solomon with its, you know, graphic descriptions and the way it's written. So I just kind of made some notes about why is it hard to understand. As with all the wisdom books are written in the Hebrew poetry fashion. We've talked about that a few times, the parallelisms and just the way Hebrew poetry is written. So it's kind of choppy. Some of the tenses are off, so that makes it kind of hard to understand. This book isn't a story like Ruth or Esther that you just read through it and it just makes sense. It's choppy. Some of that Hebrew poetry comes into play. Another thing, there's about 50 words in the book that aren't used anywhere else in the Bible. And as Dale knows from how to study the Bible, when you run into a word that you don't know what it means, the first thing you do is you see how it's used in other places in the Bible. That's one of the rules of Bible study. Yeah. Well, if it's never used anywhere else, we don't really know what it means for sure. That adds to it. The Strong's or the 1828 Webster's. Now the imagery, they use a lot of imagery in here that isn't familiar with us. You know, they use a lot of comparing each other to different spices and nature and animals, perfumes. She tells him that the smell of his garments like Lebanon. What's that mean? Cedar, maybe he smelled like cedar. And he tells her that your eyes are like fish pools in Hebron or Heshbron or something. The book is the book is full of pickup lines. You know, I've been using them for the last 2 weeks,
yeah.
And they don't work for the 20th century American.
You're like a young roe.
Young roe in the field, yes, with all that. And they had some pet names for each other. They would call each other, you know, he tells her that she's like a horse. Pharaoh's horse.
Thoroughbred.
She's a horse face. She's got this seal garden. He's an apple tree, and he's a cluster of henna. I mean, it's very colorful. It's a really fun book. It only takes about 30 minutes to read this book, and that's a lot of fun if you ever just want to have some fun. One of the main things is it's difficult to tell with this book who is speaking.
Yeah.
At different times. And there's a couple keys to telling who is speaking. Kevin.
There's beloved, which means she's talking to him.
Yes.
And then there is, what's the other word?
Now, did you know that before you came in?
No.
Okay, I was going to say, if you did, I'm going to give you a candy bar. Most people don't know that.
Steve told me.
Oh, okay. Steve, yeah, I figured he'd know. Yeah, there's a couple key words we'll talk about in a second.
It made more sense then. So.
Yeah, and you know, actually what I did in my Bible, which I'm kind of jumping ahead, but...
I
actually used there's four different people that speak in this book, and I actually used a highlighter to tell who is speaking. So then when I look at a verse, I know immediately, oh, that's the daughters of Jerusalem saying that. So we'll get into some of that in a second. All right. So, the key verse in Solomon 8:7. Yeah, let's just flip over to it. If we're all in Song of Solomon 8:7. And this is a neat verse. Chuck Swindoll had some really some good little comments about this verse. But does anyone care to read that? I need to get another drink. 8:7.
It says. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can the floods drown it. If a man would give all the substance of his house for love, it would utterly be condemned.
Condemned, which means rejected. So it's saying, basically it's talking about love. Love is the strongest emotion that we have. Many waters cannot quench love, and it can't be stopped. Floods can't drown it out. You can't stop love. And even if a man would give everything he has for love, it would be rejected. We cannot buy love. Which, think of salvation with Jesus, our true love. We cannot buy salvation. He gives it to us freely. So, anyway, so that's the key verse. Christ in Solomon. Now, this is an easy one. Some of these books, not so much the wisdom books, but some of the books like Numbers. Every book in the Bible, Jesus is in it. Some of the books, it's a little harder to find him. That's the fun part, trying to find him. This book, it's easy.
It's like, Where's Waldo?
Where's Waldo? Yeah. It's Solomon. Solomon is, like I mentioned, one of the greater types of Christ. And in your handout, we're not going to really go over this. I just gave it to you for information. Kind of the back page. You guys have probably heard of Jonathan Edwards, great preacher back in the 1700s. He wrote a book one time, and I downloaded it a long time ago. Now I can't find it, but luckily I have it. Where he listed like 80 ways that Solomon is like Jesus. So it was really cool. So I went through this week and just kind of pulled out a few of the ones that would kind of make sense to us. And you know, they were both kings of the Jews. They were both shepherds. They're both called beloved. Interesting comparisons there. But we won't really go through all that. So that's just kind of for your benefit, edification there.
Both are engaged to chaste virgins.
Yes, they were both engaged to chaste virgins, which was one of the key teachings of Song of Solomon, is that she...
Talking about Jesus being engaged to us?
Yes. Yep, in 1 Corinthians. I think it's
in what I was at. I'm confused.
Well, yeah, and we'll kind of cover some of that. In which he was engaged to her, and she kept... The book teaches abstinence. She, him and her, as romantically involved as they got, they never, you know, went there. She was a chaste virgin when they were married, so it's just one of the many places where that comes out. All right, another interesting thing about Solomon that I stuck on here. Christ is seen as the bridegroom in Solomon. All right, some of you may not have known this. Interesting note on your handout. Solomon actually had two names. One of them was given to him by God, and God wanted to call him Jedediah, which means my beloved. So it just all comes full circle. But David decided to name him Solomon, and that's why I put the verses in there. You could look it up.
Where do you find that?
2 Samuel 12, 24 and 5. Yep. I'll just try to always put the verse reference. You guys know I'm not making this up. Yeah, so the second name for Solomon is my beloved. That's kind of interesting. All right.
That's real good, Jim.
Now, yeah, that was cool, and I dug that one out. I had it in my Bible, but so much of the stuff you forget. It's a shame how we forget things. All right, the cast of characters. This is where it's going to start getting a little confusing, and I tried to not have it be confusing. First we got, there's four speakers in this little play. You got to think of Song of Solomon as like a little play. And the thing with a play, it kind of hops around a little bit. And different speakers will come in to the play, and you don't really expect it. But based on what they said, you can kind of tell who they are. But so first I wanted to outline the speakers. All right. First, we have the Shulamite woman. That's the bride. That's the she's the main speaker in the book. She's from an area called Shulam, Shunam or Shulam. People don't really agree on that. Which, imagine what Shunam means. It also means peace, just like Solomon's name. So that's kind of cool. His name means peace. It's like Shunam is the female version of Solomon. You know, it's like Julia and Julius. So that's kind of cool. So they complement each other just by the roots of their names. She's a country girl. She lives in northern Israel. Let me draw a quick little map of Israel here. You know, we had the Galilee here, and you got the Jordan River comes down, and you got the Dead Sea. And you got Jerusalem here. Shunam is believed to be up here, somewhere up in this area. It's like 50, 60 miles between there to Solomon. So that's kind of where she's at. And like Kevin said, okay, let me back up a shade. Solomon, when he took office and when he took the throne, he had vineyards all over Israel. Okay? And he had a vineyard up here. Purple. Draw a little cluster of grapes here. Solomon had a vineyard up here. Solomon would hire out, like, sharecroppers, or he would hire people to work the vineyard. Okay? That's what this girl and her family were doing there. They were up here just working in Solomon's vineyard. She's just a poor country girl working in the vineyard. Now, like Kevin said, all through the key is all through the book, he calls her my love. That's why I even put it in bold on your handout. Because when you're reading through the book and he says my love, or someone says my love, that is him talking to her, always. And then I just put in a few verses where that comes out. All right, that's her. She's the bride. She's a Shulamite girl. Her name is never given. Huh. And there's a lot of interesting speculation on who that might have been, which is always fun to get into speculation. Some people think it's Abishag, the girl that helped David out. A lot of people think that she was Rehoboam's mom, the guy that takes the throne after Solomon. Because when Solomon takes the throne, or when Rehoboam takes the throne after 40 years, Jeroboam's 39, which would match up with the time of this book. So, speculation.
I hate how maps are never the same.
Why? My map's accurate.
No, I guess I'm saying mine probably isn't then, because mine shows it on the opposite side.
Some people put it over there. Most put it there. All right, so the second speaker is Solomon himself, the bridegroom. And like Kevin and Steve have said, he is always called my beloved. That's his name in the book. Anytime someone talks about my beloved, they're talking to him. So that's a big key to the book. The daughters of Jerusalem. Now these are her friends. These are like the bridesmaids. That's what they're called. Friends of the girl. These are just some girls that are kind of off to the side over here watching the show. And every once in a while, she'll address them, and they'll, yeah, that's right, you know, you need to stay free.
Keeping them in check.
Keeping check, yeah, you know. And they always just chime in a sentence or two. They don't really have a lot to say, but what they have to say is good.
Peanut butter.
Yeah, so they're off to the side. So you never, it's weird, like, the bride will just turn to her and address the daughters of Jerusalem. And kind of the same thing with the Shulamite woman's brothers. They're the fourth speaker. They show up at the end of the book, which we'll look at what they said here in a little bit. But they okay. But that's the fourth. And they only say a couple things. So those are the four speakers in the book. Any questions on any of that? Okay. Now, what I thought I would do, I'm doing this one quite a bit different, or a little bit different than in the past. Instead of just launching in, going through chapter by chapter, I'm just going to kind of tell you the story. I actually typed it out here. I'm just going to tell you the story, and then I think once we hear the story, we'll go through the chapters real quick. And the reason I'm doing it that way is because it is kind of choppy, and it is like a play or like an opera, maybe, where some things will be happening and she'll like remember something and tell you about something in the past, and it's kind of hard to like keep it where am I at in the story. All right, so here's the deal. Like I said, Solomon's got all these vineyards all over. The Shulamite family is working in one of them. It's a mom and the daughter and a couple brothers. And for some reason, they're mad at her. I'm not sure why. And it's kind of like a Cinderella story. They put her out in the field doing all the work. So she's like Cinderella out there. And And because she's always out in the vineyards working, she's really dark. She's gotten really tan, and she's embarrassed about it because that was a sign of lower class. You know, if you didn't need to go work, you'd sit in the house, you'd be white. So that kind of thing. You guys know what I'm saying.
How white of you?
Who?
How white of you?
How white of you? Yeah, no. You wouldn't be dark. So she was dark, and she was embarrassed about it. That's the point. She had a blemish in her mind. Well, one day she's out, and this hunky man comes walking in with his sheep. And she assumes he's a shepherd, and he's got all these sheep. And they end up falling in love, and they start talking to each other in this mushy talk, how, you know, you're all that and a bag of chips. And she wants to have lunch with him. And, you know, where do you have lunch at? And he tells her where to meet him at for lunch and stuff like that. Well, then they fall in love still, and he has to leave for a while. It's not really clear if she knew he was the king, because she thinks he's a shepherd. She calls him, he's shepherd. So he leaves for a while. Well, and then she's lovesick over him. She's talking about how awesome he is. You know, my man's awesome. He's like ruddy. He's got a stomach of marble or something. Legs are awesome. He's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, then in verse 3, or in chapter 3, he comes back. Big time. And he comes back as a king this time. They're all carrying him on like we see in the movies, you know, they have the platform and all of his groomsmen are carrying him. And she's watching all this, and she's talking to her daughter in Jerusalem. Hey, here's my man. He's back. You know, and they're all partying. It's really cool. So then they get married in chapter 4. They have their wedding night toward the end of chapter 4. They go into their secret garden together, this magical garden with lots of fruit and good stuff. Then in chapter, they get married and consummate it. Well, in chapter 5, they have their first little fight. Now they're married, and now they're...
That's how it goes.
That's how it goes. So they have their first little fight in chapter 5. They get over it. Chapter 6, more happy talk, and they end up taking a weekend getaway, and they go back to her family, and that's when the brothers tell Solomon that, you know, our little daughter here, we kept her pure for you. We didn't let anything happen to her. So when she married you, she was a virgin. And Solomon says, that's awesome. And now she has found favor with him. He says, he's talking to his bride, and he says, you're a good singer. Sing us a song. So the last verse in the book is the little song she sung, just praising how the king is going to come back, skipping across the mountains, come quickly. So,
why is he talking about Jesus?
That's talking about Jesus. So now that's the book. That's what the whole book is about. Obviously, there's just tons of parallels to the Lord Jesus Christ. How he first came as a shepherd.
Yeah.
He first came lowly as a shepherd. Now he's gone. We're lovesick, waiting for him. He's going to come back, come skipping across the mountains. There's going to be a wedding in heaven where the chaste virgin of the church marries Jesus. Lots of end time stuff. A lot of people will teach the book solely as it's called an allegory, where a lot of people will teach that this book didn't really happen. This is like a story about the church and Christ, which, you know, I don't believe that, but I don't buy into that. But tons of parallels between the church and Christ.
I think it's neat how it says she finds him and he immediately forgives her, and that reminds me of
Christ. Yeah, exactly.
You know, the way God forgives us.
Yeah, was that in the? Did I write that in the main thing? So now let's just take a look at some of this. That's the story. So now let's look at just a few things. Let's go to chapter 1. And again, chapter 1 is where they meet and fall in love. And this is actually a good example of why this book is confusing. Because in this first chapter, it's back and forth. It's like rapid fire, like who's speaking.
Oh, yeah, right.
All right, so it starts out chapter 1, verse 1, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. And let me just stop there. I got several notes in my Bible here that I've always thought this was a cool verse, because what does alcohol do for us? It makes us cheerful, happy, fearless, courageous.
Your inhibitions.
It does a lot of things for good things. So she looked at his love as better than the good things you can get from alcohol. So
there's like a scale.
So if you're a good husband, like I try to be a good husband to Sherry, she shouldn't need to drink to get the good benefits of alcohol, because my love should be better. You know what I'm saying? That's what that verse is saying, that your spouse or your friend shouldn't need to drink because you are so good for them. And because they both say it to each other. That's what I kind of caught my attention when I was going through this. Later on, he says it to her. All right, so verse 3. Because of the savor of thy good ointments, thy name is as a ointment going forth. He smells good. The virgins love you. She's speaking here. Draw me, we'll run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chamber. We'll be glad and rejoice. We're going to remember thy love more than wine. So again, it's better than alcohol. Then verse 5. She says, I'm black but comely. Ye daughters of Jerusalem. You know, talking to her friends. As the tents of Kedar.
What does she mean by I'm black?
Yeah, and in verse 6 she says, look not on me because I am black, because the sun hath looked upon me.
Oh, so she's
tan.
Dark, yeah.
Yeah, she's got the copper tone thing going. So, and she's embarrassed about it. And then verse 7, well, that's when she says that my mother's children were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards. But my own vineyard have I not kept. She's so busy working in the family vineyard that she's neglected her own appearance. And she's embarrassed about that. And then she's talking to Solomon here in verse 7. She says, tell me, O whom thou so loveth, where do you feed? Where do you make thy flocks to rest at noon? You know, where do you take a break, your noon lunch break? For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? You know, she's basically saying, where do you take your sheep to lunch, and where do you guys all hang out? All the shepherds would hang out together.
Jacob's well.
Well, that's down there. But
maybe Jacob's well.
She shouldn't be out wandering around like a stranger. She wants to hook up with him and have lunch with him. So, now verse 8, he starts speaking. So verse 8, he says, if thou know not, O thy fairest woman, if you don't know where I eat lunch, go the way by the, follow the footsteps of the flock and feed your sheep behind the shepherd's tent. I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses and Pharaoh's chariots. So she's saying that she's insecure, don't look at me, I'm ugly. And he's saying, no, you're like the finest horses in Egypt's
thoroughbred.
Yeah, you're awesome. That's something he does all through this book, is she's insecure like a lot of the ladies are, and he is just always complimenting her, building her up. He, you know, telling her that she's just, of all the women in this room, I love you. I'm looking at Sherry. You're the one I want. And that's the way he made her feel. He always was making her feel like she was it in his eyes. So that's good teaching there. And then he says in verse 10, thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels. So she's got jewelry on, and he notices what she's wearing. And like all women want to be told that they look nice, what they've got on looks nice. And if I forget to tell Sherry, then she reminds me that I need to to notice. You know, I was saying at the beginning of this, this has been a very convicting book for me, because I'm not good at a lot of this, building up as much as I should. And I think all of us need to look at the loved ones in our life. Not just our spouses or girlfriends, but our kids. Our kids want to hear all these affirmations. They want to hear that they look nice, that we're so happy and proud of them. So, anyway. right, so he says in verse 10, you got a lot of nice jewelry on. Verse 11, we're going to get you more jewelry. We're going to make even more studs with borders of gold. Verse 12 is her speaking now. While the king sits at his table, her perfume is sending forth the smell, and he smells like a bundle of myrrh that's going to lie between my breasts. I was reading about that, and some of the women back in this time would wear like a necklace that would have like a potpourri bag in it that they would wear overnight. It'd help them smell good all night. So she's kind of equating that he smells like a good little bag of potpourri lying between his breasts and, at night. And she says how he smells like camphor. Yeah, verse 15, he comes in again, says, behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes. He calls her my beloved again at 16. No, she calls him my beloved. Then 17, the beams of her house are cedar. So that first chapter just kind of sets the tone for the rest of the book, that these guys are just talking back and forth to each other, constantly affirming their love. Complimenting each other. Yeah, that's all I'll say about that for now. So, and it's a good model for us. Now, and then he goes away at the end of chapter 2. And in chapter 3, if you look at chapter 3, 1, she's lovesick. Actually, could someone read 3, 6 through 8? This is where he comes back. Okay, this is the second part. This is going to be the wedding section. 3:6 through 5 is the wedding part. Yeah, thanks, kid. I got a good drink. That's 6 through 8.
Who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfume, myrrh, and frankincense, with all powders of the virgin? Behold his feet, which is Solomon's, 80 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man hath a sword upon his thigh, because of fear in the night.
Yeah, thanks. So now he's back. He's and she's like, man, look at my man. Verse 3:7. Behold his bed. I mean, he's coming with all of his glory. He's coming to get his bride. He's not showing up in a beat up tempo. He is in like the king's, the best. He's dressed to the T. He knows how to treat his woman. I think that's cool, and she's really she's loving it. So anyway, then through the rest of that section is the wedding. They tell each other that they're like a flock of goats coming down from Gilead. Their necks like a tower. They go on and on with this mushy talk in that section. They get their wedding night is chapter 4, 12 through 16. That's when they go into that little enclosed special garden that's walled off from the world that she has kept protected. She's kept this protected and unpolluted until it's time for Solomon to enter in, and then they can enjoy that together. So that's what that little verses 12 through 16 of chapter 4 is about. The wedding night. Yes. Yes.
In chapter 3, verse 1, I've heard it taught that this is by night.
Yeah.
Doctrinally, that's that time.
Church age.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, the night.
It's the dispensation of night. Well, it's nighttime, doctrinally.
Yep, you're exactly right.
It's not here. Okay. The day break.
Yeah, yeah. That's like I said, this book, you know, of all the books we've talked about, this is one of the most multi-leveled books that you can study, because there are, actually, you guys know who John Gill is? He was a great early Baptist preacher, but he actually came up with a book where he had like 125 sermons just out of this book. This book can teach so many different levels of Christianity with us in the church, you know, Israel. The book was taught as Israel marrying God until Jesus showed up, and that's a whole other cool way of looking at it. Lots of teachings in this book. We're just kind of skimming across the water for us. But yeah, you're exactly right. And when Jesus left, after, you know, he rose and went back up in Acts 2, we entered into the kind of the night age of the church where we're waiting on him to come back. But it's
because it talks about watchmen in verse 3.
Yeah.
In some of Paul's epistles, you know, talk about
the night watch. And there's four watches. So, yeah. you're exactly right. It can be taught that way too. Or it is.
It starts talking about the armory and 1,000 bucklers and shields, which I want to think are us, the Christians coming back, and it says, until the day break and the shadows flee away, I will get me to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. And I think that's after tribulation. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the marriage.
Yeah.
The bride in heaven. The bride with the marriage feast when the church marries Jesus. Yeah, that's another way of looking. That's the doctrinal teaching. All right, so chapter 4, the section 2, the wedding section, goes up to 5. All right, now the fun part, well, fun, kind of fun, is the last section of the book, 5 through 8. This is just their daily life as a married couple. And this is where they have their first little fight. So if we look at 5:2, go to chapter 5, verse 2. This is the last section of the book. They're married. Married life is upon them, all that entails. She says in verse 2, I sleep, but my heart wakes. It's the voice of my beloved. He's knocking on the door. He's saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. For my head is filled with dew and my locks with the drops of the night. So for whatever reason, she's in bed, he's outside pounding on the door, and it's raining. Hair's all wet. I don't know what he's doing, but he's there. And he wants her to come up and open the door. And look at verse 3. She says, well, you know, I've already taken off my coat, my clothes. She's got her jammies on. I don't want to put it back on. I've already washed my feet. I'm in bed. And then verse 4, my beloved, he puts his hand. So Solomon's outside sticking his hand through the door, trying to unlock the door. You know, and she, I don't know if she sees it, but it's going on. He can't get in, so he goes off and wanders off into the night. Well, she's laying there in verse 5. She's feeling bad. She's neglected his needs. I woke up to my beloved, the doorknob still smelled like his cologne. His fingers were sweet like his cologne on the handles of the door. She opened it up, but he's gone. My soul faileth. I sought him, but I could not find him. Down there in verse 6, I called him, but he gave me no answer. So basically we have a situation where she's just neglected the needs of her husband. Like sometimes we'll neglect the needs of our kids. We'll neglect the needs of someone we love, and they just turn and went away. So she spends the rest of the chapter trying to find him out into the night, and she actually does find him in chapter 6.
The guards, they like scolded her or something, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, and there's a cool teaching with that. There's a cool teaching, but yeah, they do. They scold her and actually beat her up a little bit. But she finds him, and when she finds him in chapter 6, he immediately starts in verse 6:4, with the love talk. Oh, thou art beautiful, my love. Comely as Jerusalem, in verse 4. Terrible as an army. He says, you're so beautiful, I can't hardly look at you with your hair of goats and like Gilead. And your teeth, again, are like, in verse 6, are like the flock of sheep. So he's laying it on. He's giving her the same love and affection that he gave her before she neglected him. He didn't say, woman, what's wrong with you? It was raining. I was banging on the door. You do this to me all the time. I'm out. This is my second job. And I come home and you've locked the door. I mean, he didn't. That's what we do. He was just immediately forgiving, unconditionally forgave her for whatever trespass she did, neglecting him. And it's cool. He just starts in with the love talk. Let's see. Really, the only other thing in that chapter, in chapter 8, is when they go on their weekend getaway. 7:12. It's actually verse 7, or verse 12, chapter 7, verse 12. She says, hey, let's get away. So they go on this getaway, and while they're gone, the brothers, you know, that's when they tell Solomon, we've kept our little sister chaste for you. So when she married you, you know, she's a virgin, and Solomon thanks him, and then he asks her to sing the song in verse 13, 8:13, and then in verse 14 of chapter 8 is the last verse of the book, which is a lot like Revelation, you know, come quickly, Lord Jesus. She's saying, make haste, come quickly, my beloved Christ. Be like a young roe skipping across the mountains. So that's how the book closes. So now, real quickly, you know, I just wanted to go through a few things. How does this book apply to us? Well, first, you know, like I put here on the handout under the how does this apply to me, it's not just a book about marriage. It can be applied to any loving relationship we have. The love for our kids, the love for our parents, the love for cousins, friends. You know, it's a book about love and how we should treat others. And the first point here, that God is our role model, follow the Shepherd King, because Solomon here, just over and over, as a type of Christ in the book, just shows us, he shows her unconditional love. No matter what she does, he loves her. You know, he never casts her down, he never gets on her about anything. You really need to clean yourself up. You've let yourself go since we got married. None of that talk. He's always building her up. Because he is the type of Lord. Now, she was always insecure. He consoled her. She always felt safe with him, just like our kids should feel safe with us, you know, our spouses. Our loved ones should always feel safe with us. She's always calling him an apple tree. You know, something interesting, too.
He bears good fruit.
He has, yes, good fruit. Lauren told me something this morning I thought was interesting. I've heard it. I haven't studied it in a while. I know she's going to be listening. Hi, Lauren. How are you? But in the New Testament, a lot of men hear the gospel, they see Jesus, they meet Jesus, and they reject Jesus. Women don't. And Lauren said, I don't think there's a single woman that ever rejected Christ, because he is the man that we all want.
That's good.
And yeah, that's pretty cool. I got thinking about that. Women are more tender, I think, to the Lord, and they're. Whenever me and Sherry got married, our pastor, we did the premarriage counseling, and he really beat into my head that women are the responders to the marriage. They respond to the love and nurturing that the man, that me, gives, and the same thing with Christ. You know, we respond to him and the love he gives us. So, and I've always remembered that about. I don't always do it, but I've remembered it. All right, the second point, and this is a cool little point here. Protect your relationships. Fight the foxes. All right, our Shulamite girl worked in the vineyard. And one of the problems that she talks about in the book, 2:15 in particular, is the problem of the foxes coming into the vineyard and spoiling the fruit. Okay? Our houses are like vineyards. We're cultivating love. We're raising kids. We have spouses, you know, family members that we have to protect. So the foxes are the things of the world that will distract and destroy and slowly erode your relationships. Okay? She was always on the lookout for these foxes. She tells Solomon, you know, let's look out for these foxes, because they get in there, they dig, they burrow, they destroy. And we have those same things in our lives. And I put a few things like, you know, we're too busy, we're angry, poor communication, we work too much. We allow our kids to have inappropriate friends. Those are things that can distract children, loved ones from serving the Lord and from our relationships. Yeah, Kevin.
I thought
when I read that she was talking about the other men or whatever that worked in the vineyard.
Could be. I mean, it's.
Yeah, but I think it's her fruit here or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. It could be. You could probably preach that, but. You know, one thing that's interesting with, I think a lot of you guys are gardeners in here. I know Leon, he's a gardener. Ever since the fall, when we plant a garden, actually this applies to anything. Back in Genesis, man has to struggle to fight the ground against weeds and, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but like if you planted a flower out in the middle of a field and you didn't tend to it, the weeds will overtake that flower. It's work to keep something precious that you want to, protect. Just like our loved ones, our kids. We don't just have a kid and let them off on their own. Just, like a tomato plant or something. You've got to continually watch after that child. You've got to always watch after your spouse. You've got to always watch after your relationship with the Lord, with coming to church. There are so many things in our life that we get lazy about, and we allow foxes to come in and distract us, and it takes our fruit. Quite frankly. I don't know how it ties in. I just had a transient thought. Because when you have loved ones, you have a girlfriend or boyfriend or something, that means that you have the ability, you know how to win someone's love. If you have a spouse, you have a girlfriend, you have a boyfriend, you know how to win someone's love. Well, what happens is we get cold and we don't tend to the love like a vineyard. We let the distractions of the world come in, so pretty soon that relationship gets cold. And the same thing will happen with your relationship with the Lord. You knew the Lord at one time, you get saved, you start going to church, but if you allow the things of the world to pull you out of church, pull you away from the Lord, it's just going to spoil your fruit. That's kind of what I think of with the foxes in the vineyards. So, all right, the third thing I stuck on here, the importance of affection. Wow, I mean, they're always, like I said, they are constantly saying nice things about each other, always building each other up. our loved ones, they need assurance that we love them. Our kids do. I mean, we all know this. This is all basic stuff we all know, but we do. We just have to really have a love language. That's one thing that Sherry actually said something the other day when she was talking about Jolene's not here today, but Sherry seen Jolene and Celine at Price Chopper, and Jolene or one of them mentioned a pet name that they had, and that got me thinking, all of us have a language that we speak in our homes that would be embarrassing or awkward if other people, I mean, it's not bad, I mean, just like pet name. I have pet names for Sherry that probably, I'm sure our kids don't even know. They're not bad at all, they're just pet names. And those are good, that's what they have in here. So it's good to have your own language, and it shows affection. By having your own little love language in the home, the way you talk to your kids, that's what they did in the Book of Solomon. I think it's cool. And that just reminded me of that when Sherry was talking about Jolene the other day, because Celine, I think, mentioned she had a pet name. But all right, so I just listed a few things here that we need to remember to do. Compliment each other. We notice small things that we do for each other. An attitude of gratitude. Little love notes. You know, my grandma told me a story one time years ago. I was a little guy. Well, maybe not little. I was probably married. But anyway, her and her husband, my grandpa, kind of a step-grandpa, but they always had trouble sleeping, so they'd get up in the middle of the night and, drink a cup of milk or whatever. And they would leave each other these little love notes because they knew that the other spouse would be getting up in an hour or something, and they would see their notes. So then they would add to it. And I just thought that was so sweet. And every once in a while I remember to do something like that, but I'm just terrible at that. So I'm going to really try to be better about showing affection with little love notes like that. All right, a couple quick ones here. See the happy, healthy home. You know, she's always talking about how he's like an apple tree, alive and fruitful. Lots of proverbs about the happy home, which kind of gets back to the whole life under the sun. You know, last week we talked about how life on earth is without God is depressing and meaningless. So in God's infinite wisdom, way back in Genesis, he gives us our spouses and our families to help make life under the sun fun and enjoyable. And that's the way our home should be. It should be a happy home, alive, cultivated, flourishes. I think that's about all I had about that. All right, so the last thing, reconcile quickly. This is a good teaching in the book that we've already kind of hit on. Whenever she neglected his needs and he went out into the night, you know, like the Hulk, just wandering the earth somewhere. You know, life is tough. We're all going to have conflicts with each other. It's unavoidable. Our feelings are going to get hurt. We will be offended. A lot of the root of that is our own pride, but that's another study. But it's cool that a couple things here that I think of when I read that passage is like whenever she realized she had neglected his need and she was going to go out and find him, she didn't appear to be scared or worried that his reaction. She was secure in his love, I think. And so when she found him and she was ready, she didn't even really apologize. She didn't need to. He forgave her already. He immediately started in with the goat hair love talk, you know, and that's pretty cool that he didn't hold any axe against her. And that's the way we should look at our conflicts that we have with each other, is forgiving our bride. Another thing that in my premarital counseling is I'm the man. I will always try to take the blame. For if there's a problem in the house, if there's a problem at work, I'll take the blame because he took it from me. And there's no blame I can take on this earth that's going to equal what he took from me. So I try to keep my pride in check. I don't always, but I try. I'll just take the blame. So whenever me and Sherry are having a big blowout fight and she's getting ready to reach for the pan, knock me on the head, you know, and I'm cowering. I'm in the corner cowering. Don't hit me. Not again. You know, I'll take the blame. Said, I'm sorry, Sherry. I love you, and I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. So, you know, the point is he doesn't prolong the fight by launching into the top 10 things you've done to me. Let's talk about what you've done to me. He just ends it. Same thing with our kids. Our kids should never be afraid to come to us like she was. If we've neglected our kids, we've done something to our kids should always feel secure in our love toward them to come to us and seek forgiveness. So that's kind of my five things. I started out with 20. This book's loaded. You know, like Dennis said, this book is really a deep book. For being 8 chapters, there's some mighty deep teachings in this book. But we'll just kind of keep it loving for others. So tomorrow morning, how does this help me tomorrow morning when I get up and go to work? Why do we even have this book in our Bible? You know, like I said, love is the strongest emotion we have. It is a gift. God gave us a gift of love. It's an awesome gift. It's the second commandment to love others. It teaches us how God wants us to love each other, sacrificially and unconditionally. That's what the book teaches. No strings attached. And our relationships with our kids, with our wives, families will be as deep and meaningful as you want to make it, however much you want to tend that vineyard and keep the foxes out. That is how good your love can be. That's what Solomon teaches. Solomon. So that's the book in a nutshell. Any questions on the Song of Solomon. Yes, Dennis.
Hey, thank you for the pet name.
The who?
The pet name.
Oh, do you have pet names?
No, I was just thinking.
Let's hear them.
No. You just gave a new perspective to this book. I'm thinking about she would call him Rocky and like Pillars.
Yeah, lots of pet names.
And she would call her Goatee. Hey,
yeah.
Goatee.
Goatee.
Anyway, just trying to think the pet names that he would.
Yeah, you can get some good ones out of this book. Okay. You can tell her she has a nose like Lebanon. He pulls that on her one time. And they work. They work on her. They won't work on ours.
Is Lebanon really small?
I don't know. It was an area. I don't know. It'd be bigger than normal.
Like Pat Lee, he has a kind of, I guess it's a pet name for me. He calls me Kevlar.
Kevlar? That's a good name. All right, so if there's no questions, like Steve said, next week we're doing the precious seed studies. They're always really interesting. So we'll be doing that. And then the next time we get together in 2 weeks, actually what I thought I would do, you know, we've, just real quick here, does he want to say something too? Okay. When we did Proverbs a few weeks ago, that was like book number 20. So we're like halfway through the Old Testament now. And with today, we have finished the wisdom books. And we're getting ready to shift gears big time and go into the prophets. So I thought the next time we get together, and not next week, but the next week, I'm just going to spend an hour, and we're going to kind of do a review from Genesis to Song of Solomon. Actually, I'll probably ask you guys a lot of questions. Hopefully you remembered a lot of the stuff we've talked about and some of the key teachings of the books and how they all chain together and point us to the cross, you know. So that's what we'll do next time. So that'll be fun. And then we'll start Isaiah. So I think that's it for me.
All right, good. Well, we'll take a break here in just a second.
Yeah.
One thing I got out today was just the history of the book. It's